My name is Chuck, and I'm an addict. And I was just telling my wife in the back, I don't know why, and I got to share this with you guys too, but I feel like a celebrity. And then he comes and puts this thing on me like I'm special. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Rich. Yeah. We used to call Rich the president of NA because before we actually knew him to know him and hang out and stuff, we thought like, who is this guy who carries himself so well, you know, and like knows everyone and is like, knows everything about Narcotics Anonymous. But he didn't know everything. He knows a lot, though. Good man. Ryan, thanks for that introduction, man. I love you, dude. I just want to get out of the way real quick. So if we could all pray again real quick. A serenity prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and wisdom to know the differences for today. All right, y'all know me. I'm Chuck, I'm an addict. Just like you in some ways, and a lot not like you in a bunch of other ways. I found myself coming to Narcotics Anonymous meetings all the way back in 1996 was my very first meeting. I didn't have a problem back then, or what I thought was a problem, you know what I mean? I was in IUP. I was in my senior year. I had good grades. I had just come off the dean's list in the education department at IUP. So things were looking pretty good. That spring semester rolled around, and some things went south very quickly, like within a six-month period of time. You know, I was incarcerated. I was locked up, and I went to rehab up in Clarion, PA. And I didn't know you. I didn't know my family. I didn't really know how to relate to anybody. My use of drugs had plummeted me so far out of reality that I couldn't even conversate with you. I was paranoid. I was delusional. I was schizophrenic. And it was a total mess. And I had no rhyme or reason or way of coming out of it. My parents had just recently got divorced. And I took that really hard. Even though I was 19 at the time, you know, and I thought, well, this is what I always wanted because they're, you know, I grew up in kind of a dysfunctional household like a lot of us did. I didn't get physically beaten, but I was there was a lot of neglect and there was a lot of, a lot of things that probably shouldn't happen in a regular household, but it happens. That's the nature of addiction. We accept one thing as being normal and then go from there. And then it's, we can't tell. It's so cunning and baffling that it just happens. And down the hole we go, you know. My disease led me to like Ohio raves, parties, you know, hookah festivals, different towns. My hometown's Indiana. I live in Latrobe now. So I'm like part of the Sewana area. And but this area has always been my home. You know, growing up, my wife and I would take our kids to Yellow Creek every summer, you know, multiple times. This was home. And especially what you guys going on right here behind me next month was home, was where I finally found, you know, Narcotics Anonymous. But I'll talk to you a little bit later about that and that whole journey in between. And it truly has been a journey, you know. Every time I thought I was down and out, you know, someone had something special for me to say, and it was just the simplest of things, like, keep coming back. Like, it works when you're ready to work it, Chuck. Like, don't give up. We're here for you. And I found the support that I always dreamt of having as, like, a kid in these rooms. I found the friendships in these rooms I never thought I could have. Genuine people that actually care about you as a human being. They won't, like, look the other way and talk behind your back. But even though that happens, too, we all know that. Trust is a hard thing to get for addicts. I get it. I am one, you know. I don't trust very easily, and I'm not going to trust somebody else. But, again, that's something I work on through step work, you know, and through just sticking around and letting the process happen, you know, naturally. Trying to stay in God's will the best I can is something that I'm always trying to pray for and have more of that more of that understanding each and every day so I can have compassion for other people. You know, I can get real hard, real easy, and blame someone and hold grudges for years. You know, that was the old me. That was like, I saw people growing up doing that stuff. I was like a sponge growing up, like as a kid. Like I saw all these things, and they kind of just stuck, you know, like a sponge. You put it in water, and it's gonna suck it up, you know. So, back to where I was at. In 1996, I got here. I came out of rehab, and I went to this place called Eastern Orthodox Foundation. Anybody know what it is now today? Yeah, it's a rehab. It's called Spirit Life. And like that to me in itself is my higher power doing what I couldn't do for myself. Like my higher power put me in this place, and I was not fit to re-enter society whatsoever. Like I told you guys how bad I was off, and I could barely do was like, if you put a meal in front of me, I could eat it, and I could walk to the next place and take direction like once in a while. I was literally that out of it, you know. Addiction's a mental illness. I know. I'm not going to cross or blur those boundaries today. But I know what I had. And I know it was a combination of both. So kind of like each and every day I try to work to combat it with the tools that I got, you guys, meetings, everything else. But, you know, I got out of that place and I went to Eastern Orthodox Foundation, which is Spirit Life now. And that's where I met my wife in the back there. She's in the red shorts. Hi. And, you know, without her, I can't be here today talking to you guys and having 13 years clean. I can't have two beautiful children, one who just graduated high school and one who wants to become whatever she wants to become, you know. Meeting her meant everything to me because she was that first person that showed me unconditional love after the process of being in rehab and, you know, being semi-functional, I guess. But, I'm going to get a water here real quick. Real dry. Sorry about that. She would literally, like, come into my room and I'd be like, get out of here, you know. And she was that person that actually cared about me enough to get me off the mat, you know, because I didn't want to. I wanted to die every day. I knew the pain that I had caused my entire family, the humiliation that I felt from being someone who had failed at life. And I just didn't fail at one thing. I felt like I was a failure at life. And, you know, she kind of like didn't, it was an unspoken thing. Like, it was just like what we do for people now. We get them engaged socially. You know, we talk to them. We take them to NA events and stuff. For us, that was bowling, you know, and going out. And she had two kids that were pretty young, like 10 and 8 when we met. And so I was like kind of like their tag-along big brother buddy, you know, like us all learning together and stuff. And eventually I tried to become their father, and that didn't work out because drugs got in the way again. But that's another part of the tale. But, yeah, without her, without my wife, I can't be here today. And without that place being what it was at that time and the nature, I think the nature part of that and how beautiful that place is, it was remarkable. I was able to, like, have peace for once from my thoughts and just walk around the place. Yeah, there are huge flies. And, like, when you go back in the woods, you get stung real bad. You know, so you better have your deep woods off if you're going to go hang out back there by the chapel now, or by the sanctuary, I think that's what it's called. But it's such a beautiful place, and the people were kind to me. You know, and I met a lot of people who I thought were going to kill me in that place as well. Like, people who I thought were, like, you know, with severe mental illness, you know. And that's, again, a different tale. But I was able to get through those things and feel safe. You know, and what we all need to do is, like, if there's individuals that you're praying for that are still out there, or if you're on the fence with them whether or not you want to stick around this program, you know, think about individuals like that need that safety, that need that, like, that instrumental or that concrete support that again, like we have to offer, you know, getting ourselves a safe place, safe not only over our heads, but like inside, feeling safe. Like, that's not going to come for me for a while now, but it was the start. It was that spark of like, wow, I'm a part of life again. But a big part of how I wanted to become part of life again was by using. It was like I wanted to go out and drink like normal people again. I wanted to go out and I thought I could. Why not? Everybody else does it. They don't have these kind of consequences. Maybe this was just a one-time deal. All those rationalizations kept flooding into my mind, like, all the time. And it started to erode, you know. And I went to my first meeting then, and I met some great people. And I started to get back involved, like, as I worked out of that place and eventually got my old job back. Like, all I could basically do was pack groceries. I really couldn't do much of anything. It was a miserable time. But it was a time where I knew that people were holding me up. I didn't have a God concept. I didn't know what a God of my understanding was. I really didn't. I could see it in monikers and stuff like that. And, you know, you could tell me about it in your church experience or your spiritual experience, but I had no idea of what it was going as a youth. Only time I ever went to church was like for a funeral or someone's getting married, you know. I can remember my first girlfriend taking me to church and she was Catholic, and you have to kneel. And I'm like, I looked at her, and I'm like, what the hell are you doing that for? Like, why is everybody else doing that? That was my thought process. Not like, oh, I'm going to try and fit in and do it real quick, but my first thought was, why? Why am I doing this? I didn't have that inner connection with it at all. It was just totally clueless. So then eventually, like, I started listening to what was going on and, like, praying a little bit, singing helped out some, too, and, like, feeling some kind of connection, but it wasn't truly until I got to Narcotics Anonymous and started reading the literature and reading what it said and the fact that it said, like, I could have an understanding of God of my own understanding, not yours or his or hers or the group's. I could have my own. Yeah, and that was pretty valuable to me. So I was able to kind of, like, later on, you know, begin to think about it again. There were still loads of ambivalence and loads of, like, I can do this on my own. I don't need religion. I don't need you people, you know. Those classic roadblocks that we set up for ourselves in our minds all the time, you know. Today I want to help, you know, guys and gals get through those roadblocks, because there's nothing we can't do together. I know that to be fact. Like, look at this. We put this event together, you know. I chaired this event back in 2007. I probably shouldn't have had any business chairing that event. But I did it anyway because people said, you know, you'd be good at that. And I was like, all right, well, I'll give it a shot. You know, we had some troubles with finances and stuff. And, you know, duties getting passed off. And nobody, you know, we had some limited participation. But again, we didn't have that concept of team and, like, coming together as we should have done as addicts to support one another. So I kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. But this is where I got recovery, was at this event. Make no mistake about it. When I went to this event in 2004, I was just getting clean. I probably had about maybe 65 days. I was still real raw and real unemployable, you know. Always making, you know, couldn't concentrate, going through whatever I was going through. But I came to that event and I was able to drive. I was able to get a car, like, through ICAP. And me and this other kid went, you know, and we drove down, camped. I never camped as a kid either. This is like the first time I ever camped was here. So that was kind of a new experience. So I would literally, like, I would park my car, and I would go down to the amphitheater and sit down and listen to the message. And I was just so overwhelmed with joy just to be there and be clean and be out of self, like, even just for a couple seconds or a few moments of time. But listening to those guys speak at that event in that amphitheater, and, you know, taking in a message and then just going back to my car and sobbing. And then a lot of it was joy, but a lot of it was like, I can't believe that I've been even given a chance to be here, you know, and to be part of something that's so bigger, so greater than myself. So it was a real honor to get to chair that event, like, at least once, you know. And I'll never forget it, you know, because it was that spark, you know. And this year's slogan, Fight Fire with Fire. You know, one of the first things I thought about was a Metallica song, of course, you know, because I love metal. You know, it was a big part of my recovery and always will be, you know. You know it, dude, all right? I would sit with that dude in the back, and, like, we would sit when he was, you know, doing his thing. We would just jam all night long and talk and jam and just laugh and carry on. And, you know, that's what we do in recovery for each other. We just live and we process things and we talk about them and we try to enjoy life without using drugs. That's all I ever wanted to do, was just live and try to be happy. But I could never escape it without using drugs, you know. You guys know the vicious cycle, you know. Just keeps turning on itself, you know. Low self-esteem. Use again, lowered self-esteem. Back around again, you know. Try to build back up, get back up on top. Go back down again. And that was a lot of what life was, you know. But, you know, when I think about fight fire with fire now, I think about, like, the third step. And I think about, like, what it says in It Works How and Why. It talks about the tenacity that it's going to take you to get clean, stay clean, you know. That's the fire. That's the desire that it takes to stick around here, even through disastrous circumstances, like a lot of death that we've been experiencing lately. That doesn't affect the people that knew that individual and live with them every day. It affects everybody in here. Because we've all lost in this process. All of us. A lot. Too much. The one thing we lost the most was love and the ability to love ourselves. I want that back today. I want to be able to care for someone who I had a resentment for in the past. Did an eighth and ninth step right here today. No shit. I love that. I get the opportunity to do that today, man. Thank you. I love you, dude. You know what I mean? That stuff don't come around once in a lifetime. I had chances to do eight and nine all the time. Let them all go. How you doing? I see you. Hi. Thanks for being here. We don't get those chances. They just don't come along. And because, you know, we've lived by that do or die, like risky, always risk, high risk maneuvers and all this shit. Like, we were doing all that stuff. And, like, I love safety today. It's so much fun. Just to do the safety dance, you know what I mean? And just like, you can dance if you want to, you know? And I can feel free. That's what this is all about. Like, feeling free today. Feeling free to express myself any way I want to. And knowing that, yeah, you might not accept me, like, on the outside. This dude's really weird. Like, what's wrong with him? But when I come in the rooms, we're all accepted because we're all there for that same reason, that same message of hope, you know? And freedom, that this is entirely possible for you today. And you are allowed to love yourself again, no matter what you did to yourself or what you did to others, your family members, society as a whole. It don't matter no more. It's all been erased. If we could practice some forgiveness with each other, which is, again, like, I'm not good at this all the time. I don't have this all down. Like, this isn't something that you just graduate from or that becomes totally, like, ingrained in your soul. I have moments where I'm a terrible human being, you know. Don't get me wrong. You know it. I mean, I have these thoughts and they don't stop. They keep revolving. And I'm like, man, I gotta eject this tape. Man, this tape is bad. And put a new mixtape in, you know. I get to form that tape then when I'm creative. And I'm in the literature, and I'm reading it, and I'm applying the literature. And I'm applying them every single area aspect of my life, not just if I'm at a meeting, or if I'm outside of a meeting, or if I'm in school. You know, this program has done wonders for me because it gave me the base foundation of how to act as a human being without the use of drugs. Because before that, you know, for them years, and I've talked about a little bit about the struggle between, like, 1998 and 2004, where I was just like, I was good for a while. You know, I was able to have a job and work and, like, get up on life a little bit. You know, again, we started our family. But then, you know, if it wasn't the drug I was substituting, it was somebody else. It was a relationship. Or it was shopping. Or it was, you know, it was food or something. It boiled down to, like, I never understood addiction. And I couldn't understand it. Partly because I wouldn't keep coming back, you know, and listening to what you guys were telling me, you know. People are here now, like you, are here now. When I was here, when I came in, and they said, hey, just keep coming back. I'm like, all right. You know, real simple stuff. I remember when I got in this time, man, I was humiliated to the point of, you know, like, just not wanting to live again, and walking across town to get high and not even getting high, you know, where we live. And, like, it was just due time. Something finally spoke to me. You know, and it was that finally that understanding of God that was there and said, you know, and I could hear it as clear as day now in my own inner thoughts and the inner dialogue. You know, why don't you just go to meetings, Chuck? That's exactly what it said. If you went to the meetings and put some effort into yourself, maybe things would change for you. And that's all I needed to hear, finally. And everybody's spiritual awakening is different. You may not even have had one yet. You could have had 1,000. Hopefully you had. That'd be great. You know, because you know why you're here now. You know why you're trying to help somebody else and yourself in this process. I was tired of being selfish. I was tired of putting my kids second and my wife second and third and fourth. And everybody. Things were out of whack. They were always out of order. And I wondered, like, when is this ever going to get in order? You know, and always blamed myself, and I was the biggest victim in a room. Think of that. How can you be those two things at once? But I was those two things at once. The victim and poor me and just a terrible mindset and outlook on life, you know. And that's what drug use did for me. You know, there were times when I was just, you know, again, I don't want to glorify the disease today. It has no part in it, but I do have a healthy respect for it today. I have to be respectful of this disease. It is coming at me right now, in this moment. And if I don't practice some vigilance, it's going to have its way again, you know. And I can't afford to be confused about that. I don't want that to happen whatsoever. So I need you. I need everybody in here. I need you to keep doing you, you know, so I can see some consistency. Because consistency is fleeting for me. It really is. Like, I get on some step work, I'm doing some stuff, and then put it down for like 3 months. You know, there ain't no growth in that. You know, am I practicing anything? No. I'm just stagnating, just cruising along. I know that's the enemy of this whole... That's what it wants. It wants to feed that. I want to feed that fire of desire, you know what I mean? And I do that through here, you know, and other means, too, of recovery process. But Narcotics Anonymous was, for me, by far, the best thing that I could have ever done for my own life. You know? Another thing that I would always say when I came into rooms and share about, like, you mean I don't got to pay for this? You know, it was free. As long as I got myself there. Free. No cost. The only cost was my time and effort. And man, it's been so worth it. I tell you what, like, I've been able to finish college finally. All those lost dreams are starting to awaken again. You know, I got a master's degree in education. You know, I work for the Drug and Alcohol Commission in Westmoreland County now. Like, things be, all those dreams that I thought that I could never see using, that were always out of my grasp, now become reality. Just from sticking around, doing the process, taking your suggestions, eating a little bit of a tart bite, you know what I mean? And that means I don't like it. It tastes like crap, but I got to digest it. Because it's difficult to just stay in the process, right? I wanted it to be easy. I wanted it to be as easy as that, you know, just walking around, doing my thing, you know, conversing with you guys, doing some work, being a part of service, all that stuff. Eventually it came down to, like, you're going to have to do some real work, and this isn't going to be all easy. Like, I can remember getting it twisted, easy, easy does it. Well, what does that mean? You know, does that mean that it's going to be easy? No, but take it easy on yourself, you know. For me, that meant putting the ball bat down a lot. I'm my worst critic. And then there's people that I believe that are criticizing me too. And then it piles on. It's like dog piling the rabbit, you know. I can get overwhelmed pretty easy. Then I realize that that's part of the lie, you know. I'm playing right into its hands when I think about all that negativity. And all that scarcity and all that lack, all that nothing I got. All that nothing I got. At the end of the day, I had nothing. I couldn't lay down and not think about not having nothing, you know, and being less than, and being unfortunate, this and that. We get a great chance in here to turn things around, you know, so. I hope you all take that opportunity, you know, for yourselves. And you're doing it today. And you're staying in the moment. And you're trying to practice spiritual principles, even though every fiber of your being wants to beat the shit out of somebody or tell them off or go, you know, or hurt yourself or somebody else. Like, that's when we got to stop and think. and run that tape back. You know, use our spiritual principles. Use the surrender and of the first step, and the insanity of step two. This whole thing revolves around just real irrational thinking. You know, I've been blessed to have, you know, individuals in my life in a lot of different areas, not just at the meetings, but in like halfway houses, rehabs, in my community, wherever I live, in my, you know, either at Latrobe or in Indiana or wherever I was, that again, like that were about something today, that cared, that showed me the way. You know, they were those beacons of hope. You know, no matter what they were going through, if they had a disability, or if they were faced with a death, you know, I knew that they were still steadfast and going after recovery every day. That's what this thing takes, you know. So when you guys go and when you guys go next month and you're setting up, and it's a great time. This is one of the best times I ever had, was at this event. You know, year after year after year, my kids, they enjoyed it. They got to go, you know, once they were grown up enough. And when you're there, you know, just make sure that. Give. Just give it yourself. Take time to enjoy your life. Be grateful. When I have gratitude, I'm in a much better mood, you know. And I want to be in a good mood today. I want to feel good, but I also, you know, want to experience the full range of human emotions. It's necessary. You guys all are aware of you know, how many people again we've lost and just recently, you know. People I've known since childhood, now gone. You know, it sucks. This thing has no mercy and doesn't care what you think, feel, or say, or do. It just wants more of you until it has all of you and you're totally consumed. Today, just give yourself that break and step out of that thinking, and don't, you know, use your tools. I know I'm giving probably some advice here I shouldn't be giving, but it's minor suggestions are better than nothing at all, I guess. Let's see. You want me to go for an hour? Yeah. That's probably about it. And I want to thank the committee for having me. Robbie, where are you at? Robbie, thanks, man. Asking me to speak. I appreciate it, guys. Have a fun event. And just do yourself a favor and stick around, because it's so worth it. Love y'all. Thanks.